Welcome back to Debunking Everything. I'm Chris Matthew. With me is Corey Hughes and Charlie Robinson. Corey's a former police officer, researcher, and an expert on the JFK assassination and government psychological warfare. Charlie is an author, researcher, and host of Macroaggressions podcast on the David Icke Network. Gentlemen, welcome back. How are y'all doing tonight?
Angry. How are you?
I'm angry too. I feel that. I definitely feel the anger. Before we get started, I want to thank Curiosity Stream. They are the award-winning destination for documentary series and features covering every topic from space exploration to adventure and how-to series. Satisfy your thirst for knowledge anytime and anywhere with Curiosity Stream. Just click the link in the description to start your subscription today. They start at only $2.99 a month. And become a premium member of Forbidden Knowledge News. You're going to get access to this full episode, awesome never-before-seen interviews, content, presentation, original series, and you can join our free social media network, which is now up. It's ready to go. Just visit forbiddenknowledge.news to sign up right now. Now, guys, every time I leave the house, it's a completely surreal experience. Me and Charlie were talking about this a minute ago. Everyone's not only wearing masks, but wearing them in their cars alone, walking on a remote trail by themselves wearing a mask. Every business is requiring that you wear a mask. In grocery stores, they have these 6-foot little markers to make sure you're walking a correct distance from everybody. They have markers down the aisles to make sure you're going the right direction and don't run into people. And I'm seeing signs that due to the Federal Reserve coin shortage, we can't give any change. Schools aren't going to be open. Businesses are tanking. So what the fuck is going on? Who wants to start with that tonight?
Let's look, Corey. Corey's got to take a crack at this.
This is one of the more complicated psychological warfare campaigns that we've seen possibly ever. I haven't gotten to the bottom of it, but I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's usually always one particular group of people who are behind all of this. And so we're going to go over a presentation that I kind of put together. It's really a work in progress. I was thinking more along the lines of a documentary as opposed to a presentation. So forgive me if it seems a little bit more documentary style than simply just a presentation. But I'm a little confused. I really am. I don't know what to think. And that's
a little confused.
Yeah. At first I was like, perhaps there's this virus and they're just inflating the numbers. You know, now I don't even know if there is or not, because there's two tests for COVID-2 or COVID-19, and neither one of them, from what I've read, is accurate in determining whether or not COVID is in the sample tested. So I'm as dumbfounded as everyone else. I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime, but here it is. So
there's so many things screwy with the tests in general. I mean, I've heard stories where people go into it to get a test, they leave, but they get results that they have coronavirus and they weren't even tested. I mean, crazy shit. Yeah.
That is crazy. The thing that really bothers me is this inflated death count, because if you got shot in the face, you had COVID in your system, allegedly, you are a COVID death. And so we don't even know if COVID is real, honestly. I mean, there might be some sort of, if it is real, then I think that it's some sort of manipulation of the COVID-1 in a lab, because they've been working on specifically Chinese bat COVID-1 since 2015. And I have a picture of it in my presentation, but what that basically means is that it's been 5 years since they've known about this thing and they haven't been able to come up with a vaccine yet. So that tells me that whatever they come up with in the next couple months or a year is going to be completely bogus, because if they've been working on it for 5 years and they don't have a vaccine already, all of a sudden it's just going to poof, come out of nowhere. Give me a break. I'm not being vaccinated for this period. So
well, that's going to be one of the things. If you're not vaccinated, you can't do this, you can't go there, you can't do that. It's part of the new oncoming social credit system.
Right. Well, I got basically refused service at an Ace Hardware yesterday. I'm in the middle of a move. My entire house is broken down. I went to get some supplies, and they wouldn't sell me anything. All the while, they're wearing surgical masks, which surgical masks do not protect against anything that could possibly be contagious. So the hypocrisy is overwhelming. The woman didn't have a problem, you know, entering my personal space within, I'd say, 3 feet to come and tell me she wasn't going to serve me. So obviously she wasn't concerned about the social distancing. The level of ignorance and hypocrisy over this whole thing is just dumbfounding. And I just think that the general populace is not going to put up with this, right? They're moving way too quickly to alter our behaviors. You can't just snap your fingers overnight.
Man, I don't know. I see people that are just going with it and just believing blindly everything that comes across their fucking TV screen. It's pretty sad.
Well, it just, to me, it proves that people don't read, or they don't know how to use Google, or they don't know how to look at statistics. Because everything you need to know about what's going on really is at the CDC website. And you can look at the current statistics, and we're going to go over some statistics today. And it basically, if you look at the numbers that they're telling you and you break them down, I have basically about 22,000 unattributable deaths from the death count, because COVID doesn't kill you, right? It leads to something else, and then that kills you. But and we'll cover this more in detail as we go along. But currently, we have around 140,000 pneumonia deaths. Only about 55,000 are attributed to COVID. So that means the difference is not attributed to COVID. So that's about 80 to 85,000 pneumonia deaths, not COVID related. And it's only July. And basically, pneumonia only kills in America about 50,000 people a year. So we have an excess number of pneumonia deaths to the tune of around 80,000, which is absolutely unheard of. It's out of control. And nobody's even talking about that. Why are there so many non-COVID related deaths attributable to pneumonia? Why is nobody talking about that?
A lot of things nobody are talking about. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you'll see as I go through the presentation that they're using what genuinely is the largest influenza and pneumonia outbreak probably in decades to mask the fact that there is no COVID, right? They're attributing every death to COVID. And When you look at the real culprit, it appears to me that it's basically the flu on steroids, right? So I'm not saying it's even a different virus. What I'm saying is the numbers of flu deaths and pneumonia deaths are at record numbers. And I don't want to give too much of the presentation away, so I'll save what I have left. But this is they're definitely masking the truth. And I want to know why. You know, what's the end game here? Without going on some Illuminati conspiracy.
Money. You know, money.
That's a factor for sure, but they print their own money now. So why do they have to do this for money? I mean,
So they've incentivized the hospitals now to record deaths as being COVID related to get $13,000 from the government, or $39,000 if you put somebody on a ventilator. So it's like you come in, die from, you know, surgical procedure, had nothing to do with COVID. They slap COVID on, because what difference does it make? You're dead regardless. We might as well get paid on it. And so they're now, whether every hospital is doing that every single time, I don't think that's the case. But when you incentivize hospitals, well, first of all, when you close them down to the point where they cannot do any of these elective surgeries, which is a huge component of their business where they make a lot of their revenue, you make it so they can't do that. Because they only have to treat COVID patients. And then you incentivize them by saying, well, we'll give you money for these COVID patients as long as they're actual COVID patients. Then you get a hospital going, well, we don't even have to make the decision on that just to be greedy. We can make the decision on that based on the fact that we just have to make up for all the elective surgeries that we're no longer doing, that we should be doing. So this money is going to offset some of that. So I'm not even saying that the hospitals are being like evil and nefarious. There's an accountant at a hospital going, we are losing a fortune here by not being able to open up the majority of our hospital for the things that we normally do. But there is a carrot on a stick there from the government that says, if we call all these things COVID, then they'll give us money. So it just becomes a decision of like, you know, do we do that? Are we a company that does that, or we don't? Well, how much is it worth? Millions of dollars? Fuck it. Let's do it. All right. You know, so we just name everybody. Everybody's got COVID now. And so then you've got those numbers, who knows if they're real. You've got test kits, like you said, Chris, that I've heard the same stories, people going in, waiting, you know, signing in, giving them all their information, waiting 40 minutes. Like, I got to get out. I got to get to work or something. They leave. And then they get the results of a test they never took, and it says positive. You've got the Zimbabwe guy, president, saying testing goats and fruit and stuff and sending that in, and it's testing positive. So it's like, hang on a second. First and foremost, we need to decide how we're measuring everything. If this is a scientific experiment, then how are we going to count things? How are we going to measure and account for all these things? We're going to do two different types of tests, a PCR test and another test, and neither one of them is worth a damn. And then, you know, and they did a switcheroo too, because they were talking about COVID deaths early on. And then over the last 2 months, it's COVID cases, because the deaths aren't spiking according to the numbers, but who even knows to follow the numbers? You can't even, like, I go to try and make an argument against the official narrative, but I have to use their numbers in order to do that. And I don't trust their numbers even. So it's like, it's really tough to get a handle on this, because first of all, you know, they're faking the numbers. You know, the people that are in charge are pathological liars that have been busted for being involved in some sketchy shit for a long, long time. I'm talking about Fauci. I'm talking about Gates. I'm talking about the CDC and the World Health Organization. These are really nefarious criminal enterprises that most people don't even think about. They don't know the depths of how fucking dirty the CDC is. They are super dirty. They are really a dangerous organization, masquerading as a regulatory agency. They're a vaccine company. They make all their money from vaccines. So when they set the vaccine schedule, or when they make the push to say, well, the COVID's going to have to be mandatory, just understand that they get a piece of that. They either own patents on it, which they own for tons of vaccines. They set the schedule. So they have the ability, they financially benefit from the decisions that they make. Well, we're going to make these mandatory. Instead of 50 vaccines, we're going to make it 73 now. Like, okay, well, you know, we trust them. They're an agency. They're supposed to look out for our health. So we're going to trust them. Oh, but did they mention the fact that they make money on all those things? So it's like, there's conflicts of interest here that aren't getting talked about. There's a ton of information that is getting suppressed immediately as soon as it's put on social media, which is super alarming. And frankly, to me, when I see hydrochloroquine doctors talking about that and then having their videos taken down and their websites taken down immediately, that to me is more of an indicator that they're on the right track than that they're lying, you know? So we're in a world of disinformation. You can't believe anything. I mean, Corey's going to do his presentation, which is going to be fucking amazing because his shit is really hardcore detailed, but it's all going to have a big asterisk on it. This whole thing, every conversation, because we don't know what the real numbers are on deaths, on cases, on any of this stuff. We don't know. Right. We don't know if it started in November. I know a lot of people say, oh, I felt like shit in November. I had the same things. You know, so how are we measuring it? And what are we measuring? And what's the nothing standardized. So everything is just totally a mess, and it's impossible to get your bearings. It's really frustrating.
What we need is we have a few of them, but like you said, we need healthcare workers and doctors that come out and, you know, whistleblow on this stuff. We need them to come out and talk about this. But like you said, immediately they get shut down. You know, they'll get fired and they'll be shut down in silence completely, if not killed. You know, that's something else they have to worry about. But that's what we need. We need, you know, people with the courage in the healthcare industry to stand up and say, yeah, this is what's going on, you know?
Yeah. And they're de-incentivized by doing that, because like you said, they could get killed. You're not exaggerating. I mean, there is a long list of microbiologists that have come out and virologists that have come out and talked about some of the things that the CDC and these big pharma companies are working on, or some of the things that they've been suppressing, and they pay a price for that, man. Some of them get murdered. And if you think that big pharma is above hiring hit teams, I will tell you right now, they are not above that. They are all convicted felons. Each one of those companies has been convicted in court of felonies for their actions. They've sold medicine that is tainted, that they knew was tainted, got busted in the States, then they sell it in Asia. They've been busted
putting sterilants in their vaccines. They've been busted putting chemicals in their vaccines. They've been busted lying about trials. They've been busted about, they've been sued for billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. Just look at Vioxx as one of the prime example. They knew that was dangerous. They fucking knew it. And it killed 50,000 people and they had to pay out billions of dollars. And so, you know, this is big pharma. They are going to make sure that we don't talk about the generic hydroxychloroquine, that we only talk about the vaccine. The vaccine is the only way to do it. You know, the vaccine that's going to be like the flu shot that, according to ABC News last year, at one point had an effective rate of 9%, 9%, down from right around 40% where it normally is. So this is all about money. It's all about pushing the vaccine. That's why Bill Gates is involved. That's why Fauci's there. That's why we can't talk about anything on social media. It's about money. It's about Big Pharma. It's not about us, our health. They want those death toll numbers to be high. They need that. As soon as they tailed off, what happened? Mandatory masks, a visual representation of the virus. I don't see the virus. If I walk outside, I don't worry about it. But if I see a bunch of people wearing masks, then I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? They must know something that I don't know. But they don't. They don't know anything more. They're just going off of, you know, they're just turning on CNN going, shit, I got to put a mask on because I don't want to kill grandma. It's like, well, do you know if the mask works? Well, Fauci said it works. Really? He also said it doesn't work. So now what? And that's one of the more frustrating components of this is that you have a conversation with someone. They say, well, I'm wearing the mask because Fauci said to wear the mask. And I go, okay. I can show you a video of Fauci saying the exact opposite thing. So now what do you do? I still wear the mask.
Right.
It's like Simon says, wear the mask. Simon says, jump off a fucking cliff. Simon says, get in the boxcars. You know, this is where these people are. Oh, I would never fall for that stuff. Oh, I would. Well, you know, why didn't people wake up to the reality of this? Why didn't they see this? I would never fall for that. Bullshit. If you're wearing a mask, you are falling for it. You're a sucker.
Right. And the best part is you could wear, you know, grandma's thong on your face and you'd be in compliance. That'd be fine. That'd be good enough to protect you against the coronavirus, according to, you know, what
well, you know, none of these masks gorilla mask against any virus or anything contagious. These masks people are wearing are mostly surgical masks, which are only meant to prevent blood splashback and use from like getting saliva into the open wound of a patient. That's the only use for them. It even says clearly on the boxes that they come in that this is not meant to protect you from anything. So, but people are stupid and they're going to do what stupid people do. So whatever.
Now, Corey, before you get into your presentation, if anybody in the audience has any questions during the presentation, go ahead and leave those in the chat and we'll see if we can get to those as we go. So let's see what you got here, Corey.
Sure. Let you guys know, I've been having some very unusual computer problems only revolving around my COVID-19 presentation. Both my key file and my PDF I created from it have been crashing for no reason. I just think it's rather strange.
Surprisingly, not surprising.
Yeah, exactly. So give me 1 second to pull it up. It just crashed as you tossed it over to me. So,
yeah, no worries. And something else with the social media, they have shadow banned. I'm sure it's so many people, but they've hit me so hard. If I post a link to my show, no one is seeing the post. If I post anything having to do with the show, and that's the only thing I use Facebook for is promotion for my show. Yeah. But if I happen to post something stupid one day, like, you know, just a joke or something, it gets all these, you know, almost hundreds of likes, and the other stuff is just completely not seen. It's ridiculous the amount of censorship that they're doing. I mean, same thing with YouTube. Charlie, have you noticed your podcast being censored any or not showing up like it used to in charts and things like that?
No, I haven't had that problem with the podcast. It's been, I check Chartable every now and then and it's been fine. Shit, man, I was number one in Pakistan last week.
Yeah, I'm really high in those other countries, man. Yeah.
I went to number one in Malaysia and Pakistan and I was like, okay, nice. Fine. I mean, I'm flattered that people are listening there. I mean, good.
I've been in the top five in Malaysia before. Yeah.
Have you? Yeah, they're into it. There must be something going on. They're looking to hear, listen to, maybe they're not allowed to talk about, you know,
right,
things. And so they're listening, you know, they like to listen to other people talk about it. But the social media component of this has been so dirty. And Highwire just got thrown off of YouTube today, Dell Bigtree's Highwire. So I fully expect, this is not a real stretch to make this prediction, but I fully expect that any of the channels that are discussing vaccine safety will be shut down. I mean, I think Sherry Tenpenny and Dell Bigtree and, you know, and these doctors will be silenced, you know, in the lead up to the vaccine. We can't have anybody talking about the truth now. So let's get rid of them and, you know, all that stuff. So that is to be expected. And once again, it's a real indicator to me that, you know, just ask yourself, why are they doing that? Why are they silencing all the people that are talking about some of the dangers of vaccines? And the answer, of course, is because they don't want any pushback on this. This is an agenda. They want everybody to take the vaccine. Big Pharma wants to make a bunch of money on it. The government has loaded, you know, they've loaded those vaccines up with their gene editing vaccines. The one that Bill Gates is talking about is alters you, your genetic makeup. You don't need that for something, for a potential a virus, maybe not a virus.
Seen his TED talk about getting rid of people's spirituality through these vaccines.
He's out of his motherfucking mind. I'm serious. Bill Gates is way darker than a lot of people think. And they, you know, he's the lovable nerd. He wears a sweater and everything. Be very careful of that guy. That guy comes from a really disturbed family. The Gates, you know, his dad took over Planned Parenthood from Margaret Sanger, who founded it. And that was founded to get rid of the Negro problem. Okay. So this, there's a eugenics bloodline for Bill Gates that people need to be aware of. So, but back to the social media, and of course, Gates is going to have an impact on this, is that they're trying to get everybody off so that people aren't talking about that because it's such an important part of the agenda that they can't risk it. And also people that are, you know, Q supporters, we're seeing them dropped off, and people are like pro Trump. They're starting to get rid of those. I expect all those people to go away. I think that they're going to, I think the internal meetings that the social media companies have had with Atlantic Council and German Marshall Fund and Poynter Institute have all told them, do not make the same mistake we made in 2016 and leaving this guy hanging around to win the election. Take care of the problem before the election and get rid of those people that are talking about him, his supporters. Make it hard. That's the mandate. So I would imagine that should be ramping up, because we're 100 days out from this election and Joe Biden still hasn't told the world what the fuck he plans on doing as president, except to say that nothing will fundamentally change. But exciting second half of the year.
Yes, I can't wait for that. All right, you got it running, Corey?
I just want to tell you something else strange that's been happening that I just noticed today with my computer. I use Little Snitch to monitor incoming and outgoing connections. I've had it on here for weeks. I just wiped my computer recently and started over. It's no longer there. It's not there today. So that was kind of strange for a monitoring program to just have disappeared off my computer.
Yeah, that's
somebody
pretty strange.
Might be monitoring your monitoring program.
Well, I hope so, because they can go fuck themselves if they're listening. We know what you're doing. All right, let me go ahead and get started on this. Now, I have to warn you, this is a work in progress. I really have just I've only got a couple hours into this thing. And I'm probably going to end up doing a documentary on it at some point in the next month or two. But just keep in mind that it is a work in progress, and it was more designed for documentary style. But I titled it COVID-19, Psychological Warfare in the Modern Age. Most people really don't have a grasp on what psychological warfare is. Hey, I need you to turn that down. Psychological warfare really came about in 1941 with the OSS. It was all over the place in World War II. Psychological warfare was what was used to basically fake the Holocaust. And it is prevalent to this very day. It really kind of ramped up after Kennedy. But it's... It is a real thing, and people really need to at least put in a couple hours and look over the OSS documents, believe it or not, that Wikipedia has. Wikipedia has some great OSS documents, and that's a really good place to start. But psychological warfare in the modern era, COVID-19 is a psychological warfare campaign. I don't think anybody doubts that whatsoever if they understand what psychological warfare is. And it's not about your protection. It's an attempt to alter your behaviors and your way of life. It was designed to reduce empathy among communities, and it puts everyone in a state of fear, doubtful of even members of one's own family. It has destroyed the global economy, ravaged communities, eviscerated school systems, ramped up the police state, and it's not even close to being over. You know, I wonder when this thing really will end. One day, will they just, you know, say, hey, you're good to go? I don't know.
Seems like an ongoing thing. I mean, I don't think we're going to see an end anytime soon, at least.
Here's the problem. You know, as soon as a grocery store says you can't come in without a mask, what are you going to do, deprive me of food? That's a human right. And since the system we operate under, like a capitalist system or even any system, when you go get your food, you have to pay for it, right? So by not doing business with people who refuse to wear masks, you're basically isolating an entire segment of the population. And another thing most people don't realize, when I got basically told to get the hell out of the Ace Hardware yesterday, he told me I could stay if I showed him a doctor's note. Please note that you never have to show anyone a doctor's note to do anything in this country because we have HIPAA laws. HIPAA laws protect you from having to disclose that. So if someone tells you you need a note to be in the store, basically what they're doing is they're discriminating against a person with a potential handicap or disability. And that is, to me, absolutely unacceptable. I don't even know how it's legal.
It's also, in some cases, worthy of a $75,000 fine against in some states. So yeah, it can be a serious thing. Now in this case, it's kind of just like you saying, playing the law and saying, well, you're not allowed to ask me because it's stupid. Because we all know it's stupid for them to want you to put on a mask anyway. Especially when it's like, hey, put this bandana, just put a bandana over your face. We're like, really, are we going to pretend that we're at, is this this medical theater now where I can wear a bandana over? Why don't I just go put a gorilla mask on? I'll do that. Would that make you happy technically?
As long as you're in compliance, you're good.
I'm compliant. No, with my gorilla mask. It's insanity. I don't know why more people aren't really pissed off about this. I'm so disappointed in Americans. They're just a bunch of fucking sheep. They really just watch television, and I'd love to think better of everybody, but I just don't. It's like they watch.
I go crazy when I see someone in their car with a mask. I'm sorry. I don't.
I mean this kind of half jokingly and half seriously, but if the government today came out, on news, Fauci and all that, and said that the virus typically lives right about 3 or 4 feet off the ground. That's where it hovers because of the molecular structure. So it's best if we crawl everywhere. And if they said that with a straight face, and then all the media kept, tomorrow when you went to Walmart, there would be 75% of the people in there on their fucking hands and knees crawling around the store. And everybody knows I'm right. But I mean, I'm trying to be funny about it, but unfortunately everybody knows that is also a true statement. And so we've done these shows before. We talk about the maniacs that are trying to run this world and how they're trying to control all of us. And we're standing up against that. And we're making people aware of it, but it's like, we're going to fight them with this batch of dipshits that are all masking up and doing it. We're fucked then. We might come on in with the New World Order right now. It's over because this batch of, or Antifa is going to stand up for it with their limp wristed throwing of rocks. They're going to sidearm rocks at people. I mean, we're fucked. If this is the best we can do, like our average intelligence of the American public is so low. They're so gullible and such sheep. And then the people that think that they're out doing something all look like the last kids picked for PE class. You know what I mean? For the kickball team, for Antifa. And they're all blue. You know what I mean? And it's, I have no faith left in humanity.
Am I still screen sharing?
Yeah, we got you.
All right. So the first reports came out December 2019, and they dubbed this a novel coronavirus, novel meaning new or unseen before. I kind of doubt that. So they always seem to come out with multiple names for the same thing. I think it's intentionally to confuse people because it's COV2 is what causes COVID-19 in a human subject. So a lot of people are talking like COVID-19 is the virus itself, and that is not the case. It's actually COV-2. COVID-19 is the illness that you get from COV-2. You know, I couldn't find it prior to this broadcast, but there is another illness that's caused by COV-2, and I passed it the other day, and I couldn't find it again to show you guys, but COVID-19 is not the only illness that is caused by the same virus. So, I mean, that would lead me to believe that they're masking the real numbers with a different virus. Okay, so according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, COVID-19 is a respiratory illness. A person may have a dry cough, fever, muscle aches, and fatigue. The virus can progress through the respiratory tract and into a person's lungs. This causes inflammation and the air sacs or alveoli that can fill with fluid and pus. This progression then limits a person's ability to take in oxygen. People with severe cases of pneumonia may have lungs that are so inflamed they cannot take in enough oxygen or expel enough carbon dioxide. That's another effect of a mask, and we'll go over it, is that you're constantly breathing in your own carbon dioxide. So, continuous oxygen deprivation can damage many of the body's organs, causing kidney failure, heart failure, and other life-threatening conditions. According to the World Health Organization, the most common diagnosis for severe COVID-19 is severe pneumonia, and that's very important because no one's dying from COVID-19. They're dying from other things leading to that COVID-19 leads to. For people who do develop symptoms in the lungs, COVID-19 may be life-threatening. In China, doctors classified 81% of COVID-19 cases as mild, okay? So I thought this is interesting because you have 80% of the population who is either resistant or asymptomatic if they do get it. And then out of those that do get it, 81% of those are mild cases, just like the flu would normally be. So you're looking at like what? That narrows it down right there to about 4% of the population will experience any kind of real hardships from an alleged infection of COVID-19. All right, inflating the truth. As of July 15th, the death rate of COVID-19 in the U.S. was reported in excess of 131,000. So my notes are as of the 15th of July, but not really much has changed. The statistics are still heading in the same direction. The Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, Interim 20-ID-01, Committee on Infectious Disease, Standardized Surveillance Case Definition and National Notification for 2019 Novel Coronavirus Disease. So this is basically trying to define what a case actually is. This position statement creates a standardized case definition for 2019 Novel Coronavirus Disease, including asymptomatic infections caused by severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, and adds COVID-19 to the list of nationally notifiable conditions. All the text I'm going to read to you here today came from the CDC website or a medical site that is, I guess you'd say, reputable. Who knows anymore? So in late December 2019, investigation of a cluster of pneumonia cases of unknown origin in Wuhan, China, resulted in identification of a novel coronavirus. The virus is distinct from both SARS-CoV and MERS-CoV. MERS is a Middle East respiratory syndrome, although closely related. Early epidemiological findings indicate COVID-19 may be less severe than SARS or MERS, but evidence suggests that the virus is more contagious than its predecessors. Well, my question then is, if it's less severe than SARS or MERS, how come we didn't lock down then?
It's so obvious the agenda behind it for folks like us, but I don't see how people can't see through this.
That's a good question. Based on epidemiological reports of the outbreak in China, those at highest risk for severe disease and death include people aged over 60 years old and those with underlying conditions such as hypertension, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, chronic respiratory disease, and cancer. Those are the biggest killers right there. Those underlying conditions, and they kill about 60% or more of the population. Disease in children appears to be relatively mild, and growing evidence that a significant portion of infections across all age groups are asymptomatic. So basically, just in reading these basic definitions, this seems like it's not a big deal, right? So pneumonia, an unspoken killer. In the United States, community-acquired pneumonia affects 5.6 million people per year. This is just the United States, and ranks sixth among leading causes of death. In 2009, there were approximately 1.86 million emergency department encounters for pneumonia in the United States. In 2011, pneumonia was the second most common reason for hospitalization, with approximately 1.1 million stays, a rate of 36 stays per 10,000 population. Uh-oh, it's freaking out again. I'm telling you, they got into my computer somehow.
Wow, I just saw that it just glitched and back to the beginning.
I've never had that before ever on any presentation I've ever given, and my computer is in generally good shape. All right, so let me jump to this slide here. Proof they're lying about the numbers. So as of July 15th, the reported COVID deaths are at 121,000. Pneumonia reported deaths are at 131,000.
Corey, just so you know, we got your little menu bar on the left. You can...
That's fine. I'm just going to roll with it.
All right, that's cool.
Keep doing it. And then deaths involving COVID-19 and pneumonia, excluding influenza, were at 52,000, right? So everything I've ever read says that it's severe COVID leads to pneumonia in 100% of cases. So if that is the case, why are they saying there's 121,000 COVID-related deaths when all cases lead to pneumonia, and that's only at 52,431 as of July 15th? I mean, that's an inflation of 70,000. This is just going over the pneumonia numbers. 2017, you had 49,000. 2011, you had 52,000, right? And so the number generally hovers around that 50,000 number for pneumonia, pneumonia by itself. And I was keeping track of the influenza deaths as COVID deaths were rising, and the influenza deaths that they reported actually, they were outpacing the COVID deaths. Drastic change in how they report influenza. And we'll get to that. I have a slide coming up really soon that's very, very shocking. So viruses, including SARS-CoV-2, account for about a third of all cases of pneumonia, which is in line with the indicated 52,000, right? So if you have generally 130,000, you got 52,000 pneumonia / COVID, that is almost in line with the usual rate of one third. So you wouldn't think that that's anything kind of out of the ordinary. However, that means that at the time, if there were 52,000 pneumonia COVID deaths, the remaining 70, it's probably over 80,000 now, are pneumonia deaths not related to COVID. So pneumonia has killed more people than COVID has, as per the CDC's own numbers. A description of suggested criteria for case ascertainment of a specific condition. Symptoms of COVID-19 are non-specific, all right? Non-specific means they're not specific to COVID. Means you can have any one of these lung diseases and it would still meet the general appearance and possibly criteria for a COVID-19. COVID-19 is a mild to moderate illness for approximately 80% of individuals evaluated with the disease. 15% are severe infections requiring supplemental oxygen and 5% are critical infections. The 15% number I've seen as low as 6%. So I don't really think that they're giving us the honest truth about that percentage either. People with COVID-19 generally develop signs and symptoms, including mild respiratory symptoms and fever approximately 5 days after infection, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so I think you guys get the point there. The clinical criteria, this is really important. The clinical criteria for reporting in outpatient or telehealth settings, at least two of the following symptoms. Okay, two symptoms and you can be reported as a probable case. And that would be fever, chills, rigors, myalgia, headache, sore throat, new olfactory and taste disorders, means you can't smell shit. Or, this is a big or means it could be two of those or one of these. And so, or at least one of the following symptoms, cough, shortness of breath, or difficulty breathing, or severe respiratory illness. It's funny how they put a cough and severe respiratory illness kind of like at the same level, with at least one of the following clinical or radiographic evidence of pneumonia or acute respiratory distress syndrome, no alternative more likely diagnosis. Well, just by looking at the general statistics that they provide, I would say if you have a cough and you go to the hospital, it's more than likely going to be influenza as opposed to COVID-19, just based on their own statistics.
Now, I had two close family members that were actually tested and diagnosed with COVID-19, and they displayed zero symptoms at all.
Well, that would fall into, like, if they genuinely were COVID positive, that would be, you know, they would be of the 80% who are asymptomatic. Asymptomatic means you don't have COVID, okay? So it could be in your system. It means that your body actually fought off the illness as it was supposed to, as your immune system was supposed to. So if you're normal, if you're healthy and you have a good diet and all that stuff, which I absolutely don't, then you're probably gonna be okay. And so, but even someone like me who has a terrible diet, absolutely, I haven't gotten sick. I haven't gotten COVID. And I think at this point, if it really is such a thing, it's saturated the population.
Right. I mean, that's the way we've evolved for thousands of years and fought viruses, is our immune system stronger by actually getting the virus and then fighting it off.
So just to catch everyone up to speed, if you have a cough, okay, and you go and you go to the hospital and you report that, that will be considered a probable case of COVID-19 because it meets the criteria. And as of April 4th, and there it did it again. You see that, guys? Wow. I have no idea what it's doing. So, basically, if you go into a hospital with a cough, they're going to say you're a probable case of COVID-19. And then probable cases are then reported as confirmed cases. And that's as per the CDC statistics. And this is a quote: confirmed cases include presumptive positive cases and probable cases in accordance with CDC guidelines as of April 14th. And that is from the COVID-19 data repository by the Center for Systems Science and Engineering, Johns Hopkins site to highlight all this stuff. It's called, if you want to check it out, it's theylietothe.world. And basically, I have a whole bunch of articles in there that debunk all this COVID stuff. It's going to have a lot of the things that I talk about in this presentation. But it also has, as the main page, the actual data from Johns Hopkins updated in real time. So if you take a look at that, you'll see the numbers every day. They're just growing out of control. And, you know, I don't really know. I haven't known anybody who's been sick this whole time.
Think about what that means. It means that they are actively trying. They changed this to make it so that it included probable cases, not just positive cases. Mm-hmm. The CDC made the decision to do that.
Right.
Why would they do that? Because they want more numbers.
Yes.
Why would they want this to be a bigger deal and not a smaller deal? Because it's part of an agenda. It's so obvious. Once you just look, like if you look at this presentation, it is so obvious that they are manipulating the numbers to make it seem like a bigger deal than it is, like a more dangerous thing than it is. And when you
but they're also suppressing the numbers of influenza, the influenza cases and deaths. They are suppressing that information. And I have a couple slides that are going to blow you away when you actually see them. But this is actually a screenshot from the Johns Hopkins data repository, and it straight up says right here: confirmed cases include presumptive positive and probable cases. And as we just saw, a probable case means that you have a reported cough.
Oh, and one more thing. Who was part of Event 201? Johns Hopkins.
Right.
They were involved in that with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the World Economic Forum. So just keep that in mind. They're part of this agenda.
So as of April 4th, the CDC declares flu season over and ends reporting of influenza data. All with flu symptoms now meet the criteria for reporting as a confirmed case of COVID-19. The final influenza death count as of 4/20/20 is 55,762. And I grabbed that number when I started to analyze the daily deaths and determine that they're grossly out of proportion, there were some days, I remember the highest number I had was about 68%. Allegedly 68% of the deaths in the United States on that one particular day were attributed to COVID, which is more than heart disease, cancer, and all these other things combined.
It's, I mean, if you can access this on your own, and, you know, I'm sure people are seeing this information from somewhere, you know, are hearing bits and pieces of this. I don't see how you can deny all the blatant information that goes against what the media is telling us, and what they're spewing out on the news every night. It's so blatantly obvious, like Charlie said. I don't see how people aren't pissed off about this. I mean, I'm pissed off every day about this whenever I walk outside and I have to try and do something and I have to put on a stupid mask. But there should be millions of people pissed off about this, and there's mostly silence. There's just people like us, researchers, that are doing our own shows and trying to get as much information out as possible. But like you said, there's an asterisk next to it to where it's not going to be seen in the mainstream. It's shadow banned. And yeah, you're right. It pisses me off, and more people should be pissed off too.
Another thing is that if I think a lot of denial about this and what's going on occurs because if people come to acknowledge that they're lying to us, the next logical acknowledgement would be that they've lied to us before. And most people, I feel, will have to admit to themselves that they've been duped for a very long time. And that is a very hard thing to come to grips with.
I'd also like to remind people that Obama passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which changed their laws to legalize propaganda to be used inside the United States on Americans. Just ask yourself, why would they change that law if they didn't intend to use it? So you can make the assumption that they are using propaganda against us. You have to strongly consider that what you're being told about coronavirus and COVID-19 and all of this is part of that propaganda. You have to consider that. It is the new reality since 2012 when he changed the laws. So just remember, if you're thinking, well, they wouldn't lie to us. Oh, no. They made it legal for them to lie to us. So they will use that. They absolutely will lie to you about it. They took the extraordinary step of making it leak. Not that they weren't lying their asses off to us before that, you know, with impunity, but they made it legal. And they did that for a reason, because they had something up their sleeve. Is this the reason? I mean, it could be anything really, or everything. They don't need a reason to lie, I guess, but it could be part of this operation. And remember, if you think that seems like, oh, 8 years ago is too far back for this, for the wheels to be turning on this, look at the opening ceremonies of the 2012 Olympics and how fucking dystopian and crazy that is, with all the kids in beds and the virus things going around everywhere. So, I mean, I don't know that it had anything to do with it, but, you know, it could. And they legalized lying to us back in 2012 as well. They have a plan. There's something up their sleeves. And I think that it is this. I think that this is the year they're going to try and ram through everything they can.
Yeah, I think I agree with you 100%. They've been planning this for a while.
So when you look at the breakdown by age groups, it's obvious it mostly affects people over the age of 55, really higher than that. It's only about a third or 55 or under. 80% of infections and death are in age group 65 plus. 80% of infections are considered mild, as is backed by the Chinese data. 5% of infections are considered to be severe or critical. 4% of the total population at risk, 96% not at risk. And the CDC has changed their death rate numerous times, but the most recent and probably accurate number they had is a 0.65% fatality rate, and that's lower than the flu at 1%. Okay, so twisting the truth, as all severe COVID-19 infections lead to pneumonia, the deaths involving COVID-19 and pneumonia, excluding influenza, is a closer, more accurate measure of the deaths stemming from COVID infection. Cause of death, still pneumonia, not COVID-19. CDC reporting guidelines clearly state to include all positive tests COVID-19 among the death count. Nearly all states have followed suit, including gunshot victims, car crash fatalities, and pre-existing condition-related deaths in the current death tally. This is a blatant lie. Pneumonia and influenza mortality surveillance. The CDC announced the end of flu season April 4th. At that time, the influenza death count isolated for COVID-19 was just over 55,000. That number was revised to 6,519 as of July 15th, 2020. And if you read that, it says all deaths involving influenza with or without COVID-19 or pneumonia includes COVID-19 or pneumonia. And one thing is that, there it goes again.
They hate what you're talking about.
I think this is kind of crazy. And I'm usually not that much of a conspiracy theorist, but this is really strange. These deaths here, they reported these numbers that were outpacing COVID up until after April. And then all of a sudden, the only amount, and this is reporting for the whole year. This is reporting 2/1/20, which includes all of January through July 11th. And they're saying that pneumonia, including or excluding, is only at 6519. I saw with my own eyes 55762. And if you Google the number and you find an article from February or March, you will find articles, which I'll show you here in a moment, that indicate that this number here is a blatant lie. For them to do that, really, that's a balls. That's hardcore for them to just outright fudge the numbers and then expect us to believe it.
Surprisingly unsurprising again, you know.
Yeah,
it's just what they do.
It's just too blatant. I mean, because people who are not conspiracy people are gonna, you know, catch on, and they are. They're starting to. Pneumonia has traditionally killed around 50,000 people a year. As of mid-July 2020, COVID-related pneumonia deaths already at 52,000, while non-COVID-related deaths were at 78,901. And I made this little Venn diagram or whatever it was. I just kind of winged it, and I found a couple of their numbers were off based on their own statistics. But if you look at this number, you can see that the COVID pneumonia combination was at 131,000, and that leaves 52,000 for both and 78,901 just for pneumonia and 55,762 total for influenza. So COVID is the lowest number of all these. You know, excluding COVID from the pneumonia deaths and influenza deaths, you got a number of 22,074. But I don't know what that number represents. That was the leftover number that are possibly attributed to COVID without pneumonia, without influenza. And so that might be the number of, you know, the gunshot victims and the car crashes and all that stuff. I mean, that might be the bullshit number, is that 22,074. And I just consider it unattributable because I really don't know where it goes. Because they straight up say that it always leads to pneumonia. And then they have this leftover number here that I really can't justify in any way. So, what is causing this pneumonia outbreak if it is non-COVID related, and why is no one talking about this? So between the influenza and pneumonia, the death count stands at 187,094 as of mid-July 2020, and this is out of a total of 209,168 deaths as per the CDC's own statistics. Like I said, 22,000 deaths I'm considering unattributable because I really don't know what that number represents, because if we have 140,000 COVID-related deaths that they're reporting, and you just subtract the 22,000 number from it, say as mistakes, that still leaves a whole chunk of numbers that don't fit into this equation anywhere. All right, so this is an article from February. The big number, the flu has hit at least 22 million people in the U.S. so far. The number of influenza infections was anticipated to be an all-time high, as numbers had been growing since 2010. The CDC, however, is reporting a total number of flu deaths at a disproportionately low number of 7,000. As of March 2020, influenza-related hospitalization reached an all-time record in the U.S. At the same time, U.S. news outlets have not mentioned influenza, yet are pushing COVID-19 as a potential pandemic. And this is as of March 5th, right? These are two articles released on the same day. We have U.S. flu cases reached 32 million, pediatric hospitalization rates hit record high, and then we have coronavirus cases surge in the U.S. and Europe, both on the same day. So you see that Congress approved an $8.3 billion emergency spending bill to tackle COVID back in February. Well, they didn't do anything for influenza, did they? And that's the real pandemic. So this is nuts. COVID-19 versus the flu as of March 5th. 32 million U.S. cases, 310,000 hospitalizations, 17,000 confirmed deaths, and a death rate of 1%. That same date, COVID had a total in the U.S. of 80 cases. And yet people were losing their minds over COVID when 32 million people had already been affected by influenza and 17,000 people had died.
You know, there's been all kind of theories of, you know, that there's other things besides coronavirus that may be contributing to the deaths, like 5G conspiracies, all this. It seems to me that's just manipulation of numbers and the media and just psychological warfare, basically.
Yeah, I think what's happening is that the flu is killing people and they're saying that it's COVID.
Right, definitely.
I apologize. I have crazy dogs, like a whole bunch of them. So, Brutus, chill out. But yeah, that number 80 is crazy. And then when I even compared the July 22nd numbers to the March 5th numbers, the actual numbers came out so drastically worse for influenza at 32 million compared to 4 million. 310,000 hospitalizations to unknown. And they said the confirmed COVID deaths were at 145,000. And we've already discussed how that number is not a real number. And yet the confirmed deaths of influenza are at 18,000. The death rate is much higher in influenza than it is in COVID, but nobody's freaking out and making you wear a mask over the flu, because people would laugh at you if you said you got to wear a mask because of the flu.
I'm laughing at them wearing masks now.
Yeah, more evidence COVID-19 statistics are doctored. This year, the flu season ended April 4th, week 15. It's week 15 as labeled by the CDC, okay? So basically what I did here, uh-oh. It's freaking out again.
I still see the flu season ended April 4th.
Yep, that's what I see also. And here we go, back to the beginning. I've never had this problem. This is just a PDF and a PDF reader. I have no idea what's causing that. It's definitely not anything related to my computer unless they hack my computer, which I really am. I'm not that much of a conspiracy guy.
So, yeah, you never know.
Flu seasons typically follow the same patterns. This is extremely important. They have a gradual build, a spike, a decline, and then a tail. Okay? So that is a pretty standard pattern I've seen in every year of flu statistics. And the key data points that I looked at were at the peak, the highest point of reported new cases. And the data we're about to look at is new cases per week. Week 15 data comparative to this year's and the end of flu season. Time from peak to end of reported cases, right? So from when it was at its worst till the end. And when I say the end, I mean under 100 reported per week, because that's negligible numbers. You know, there's always, I'm sure somebody gets, you know, diagnosed with the flu completely on the opposite end of the year. And so under 100 is really negligible. Negligible reported cases is less than 100. And the time from 5,000 cases to the end of reported cases. Now, the reason I chose time from 5,000 cases to the end of reported cases is based on the 2012-2013 numbers. And you'll see the relevance here in a moment. So this is the 2013-2014 influenza positive test results as per the CDC and also the WHO. So these are the generally agreed upon numbers. And you'll notice here, it's got that kind of gradual increase, spike, decline, and then it has like a long tail. And if you look at the bracket at the end that's highlighted up top, and that is numbers that they consider minimal of under 500 or so newer cases per week. For me, what really caught my attention was that this was only at 5,000 per week at its peak, right? So for what I was looking for, at the peak to the end of the tail usually has an extended period of time. To go from 5,000 to the end here was 28 weeks, okay? Now, when you go to 2014, 2015, it's pretty much the same, 25 weeks to get from 5,000 to the end, with a peak of 13,500 reported in a week. 2015, 2016, and you also notice the shape, it hasn't really changed. You have a gradual increase, the spike, and then the decline, and then the tail at the other end. Here we can also see that the tail they consider minimal. It was about 550 reported. That was what they considered the beginning of the end. And it took 17 weeks to go from 5,000 all the way down to the end. Here, same thing, 2016, 2017, you've got a peak of 12,000. And to get from 5,000 to the end took 16 weeks. That again, it might be a little accelerated, but you know, you never know. These things, a lot of factors that could be taken into consideration here. But the 16 weeks is an extended period of time, and the chart shows a pretty distinct symmetrical pattern. 2017, 2018, kind of the same thing from 5,000 to the end, 18 weeks, peaked at 22,000. So you have a little bit of variable here, but the tail they're considering, you know, it seems to be consistent between 450 and 650. So generally speaking, about 500 new reported cases per week is considered the beginning of the end for this particular flu season. 2018, 2019, same thing. Their beginning of the end was at 590. When the tail began, and it also took 15 weeks to get from 5,000 to the end with a peak at 13,900. These are all fitting the same pattern. Nothing has changed. This is what I would expect from the 2019-2020 flu season. However, when you get to 2019-2020, you have the end of flu season April 4th, and it drops to under 24 immediately. Immediately. So it went from 5,000 to the end in 2 weeks, as opposed to a minimum of, you know, 15, 16 weeks, as was demonstrated in the previous 6 years. This is fucking manipulation right here. This is straight up bullshit. You know, for there has not been a previous tail that was anything under 500 where it began. But here we went from 5,000 to nothing in 2 weeks. And that's not because people, did the flu just go away? Did it just disappear all of a sudden? And this in particular is the worst flu outbreak that we've had in probably decades. Decades. And they anticipated it because they've known since 2010 that generally speaking, influenza outbreaks are on the rise every year. And if you read a couple articles from 2016, 2017, you know, there are medical organizations who put out articles basically saying, hey, get ready, the flu is going to hit really hard this year. But no. Instead of reporting that data, the end of flu season, April 4th comes around and all of a sudden, they got me again. All of a sudden, the numbers drop to next to absolutely nothing. That is an impossibility. And here I compared the two. I compared 2013, 2014, 2020, and that red line, this is not to scale, but it's close. The peak in 2013, 2014 was just over 5,000, and that puts it right here on the 2020 chart. So the comparison is way worse this year, but yet it took 16 or so weeks for it to disappear in 2013. But in 2020, it was gone literally overnight. This is straight fucking bullshit manipulation. Okay.
Yeah, I'm really glad you made these. People need to see this. This is awesome.
Absolutely. So here the WHO declared a COVID pandemic March 11th at a time when influenza infections and hospitalizations and deaths were near record highs, at least here in the US, but it was no different worldwide. The whole world got hit with this thing all at once. And so how exactly did it disappear in 2 weeks? How did we go from having all these warnings that we're entering the worst flu season in decades to it just disappearing overnight? There's only one answer, and it is because they are lying.
Yep.
And now when you look at like the probable cases of influenza or the reported cases of influenza, it's all green in this chart here, which means it's minimal or next to nothing. Only Louisiana and a couple other places are even in the, not even in the moderate zone, they're in the low zone. I don't understand this number. And when you look at the other previous years, they were all pretty much null by week 30, right? Week 30 puts you in mid-August. But here we are, it's just now beginning August, and they've been reporting that there's next to no flu cases being diagnosed since basically April 4th. This is contradictory information coming directly from the CDC. This one is interesting. The Making of My Hero Is You, it's a children's book called My Hero Is You, is released on April 9th, 2020 in over 100 languages. This large collaboration, as described below, would have taken months, indicating long-term planning of this pandemic. Just like 9/11, they put out a goddamn children's book.
Wow, I've never seen this before.
Yeah, the children's book came out April 9th. This is how you indoctrinate your fucking kids into wearing a mask, you know, when they're little.
They got commercials with people wearing masks now. They got TV shows. The indoctrination is strong. Pornhub has couples fucking
with masks on. It's insane. Okay.
Those commercials with masks on make me want to fucking throw my television set into the trash. I'm sitting like 6 feet away from each other, like, cheers. Like, oh, you fucking enablers.
You know? Well, you know, I wish somebody would start a guillotine company so we could, you know, I think they'd make $1 billion because that's the answer. We need to rip these people out of their fucking homes and cut their heads off in the streets. And if you think I'm kidding, I'm absolutely not. We are centuries past the time for revolution. This book was a project developed by the Interagency Standing Committee Reference Group on Mental Health and Psychosocial Support in Emergency Settings. The project was supported by global, regional, and country-based experts from member agencies of the IAS, bunch of letters, blah, blah, blah. In addition to parents, caregivers, teachers, and children in 104 countries, a global survey was distributed in Arabic, English, Italian, French, and Spanish to assess children's mental health and psychosocial needs during COVID-19 outbreak. A framework of topics to be addressed through the story was developed using survey results. The book was shared through storytelling to children in several countries affected by COVID-19. Feedback from children, parents, and caregivers was then used to review and update the story. So this must have taken months and months. It's in over 100 languages. Just to do the publishing on this thing alone should have taken 3 weeks to a month. You have over 100 languages, which means you had translators come in. And even if it was like Google Translate, that thing's not perfect. You have to have a human being go over it and verify. So you've got at least 100 people working on this thing translating. You've got to have a couple hundred people total involved in this project. And it had to have started way back, probably last year. So the first couple cases coming in way before there's any cases in the United States, and they are already planning a children's book.
Bunch of dicks.
This is proof of conspiracy right here, honestly.
How dare you do this? You know what I mean? How do you live with yourself if you're somebody that's participating in all this fucking covering up and this creating something out of nothing? I can't understand that, man.
I think it goes down to ultra compartmentalization, really. I think it's ultra compartmentalization, and you just have one little teeny task to do and you don't see the bigger picture, and they can keep everyone in the dark. But, you know, when you have governors coming out being pissed off that they're inflating numbers, and then the CDC is saying they're not inflating the numbers, you know, releasing contradictory information is a key characteristic of psychological warfare.
Oh, absolutely.
Always keep that in mind. You know, we really should do a show just on psychological warfare sometime, and I'll go over all the OSS stuff, because really it's some of the most important. It's the foundation for understanding anything going on in the world today.
That'd be fun. I mean, I don't know if fun is the word, but it'd be right.
So what's really going on? Something. According to CDC, flu-related deaths between the years 1986 and 2007 ranged from 3,000 to 49,000. Since 2010, the flu-related death rate has been between 12,000 and 61,000, with the highest season being 2017-2018 and the lowest being 2011-2012. Between October 1st, 2019 and April 4th, 2020, according to the CDC, the flu has resulted in 39 to 56 million illnesses, 410,000 to 740,000 hospitalizations, 24,000 to 62,000 total deaths, and 169 pediatric deaths, which is just a drop in the bucket, really. Kids are pretty well immune to most things as they're building their immune systems. All right, so now you've got all those numbers, you know it's bullshit. Let's talk about face masks, and let's stop using the term social distancing, and let's use the term social isolation, because that's what it is. I actually even saw on YouTube one of these schmucks who has a gym, instead of buying $10,000 isolation units, he put with shower curtains isolation units around all the gym equipment. I don't know about you, I don't work out, I haven't in years, I should, but I don't. And I'm not going to go stand in some little freaking isolated room while I'm doing my bench press. It's absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Can I just say that the term social distancing is straight out of George Orwell. It is classic doublespeak, because you can't be socially and then distancing in the same thing as a contradiction. So it is another component of the psychological warfare, is the intentional misusing of words and putting them together, as Orwell talked about, that newspeak, the language they created. It is intentionally designed to fuck with your head. And it is a tactic that you would only roll out if you were putting on an experiment, or if you were rolling out what they're doing right now. This is what it's made for. Words straight from the fucking Tavistock Institute. Social distancing is one of those words, man. I totally agree with you, Corey. People have got to stop saying that, man. It is part of the spell they're putting on us. It is a contradictory term, and it's no bueno.
Yeah, are people not supposed to date anymore? I mean, you got to sit right 6 foot apart when you're on a date.
You gotta wear a mask if you're going to be intimate.
It's fine. If they're throwing Molotov cocktails during the date, it's totally fine. Because as we know, the virus doesn't get you if you're protesting for Black Lives Matter. But if it's anything else, then yeah, you should definitely wear
And realistically, back in the days of the Klan, in the early 1900s and mid-1900s, laws were passed all over the country banning the wearing of any kind of concealment of your face, and it was meant to counter Klan activity. Those are still on the books. I was a cop for about 9 years, and that was one of the that was a statute that I specifically remember, is that you were not allowed to wear a face mask and walk down the street. We could stop you and stop an ID and all that stuff just for wearing a mask. Plus, I do wonder, has there been an increase in armed robberies? And if so, is that another intentional byproduct of this, adding to the destruction of our country? Because that's what this is, an intentional destruction of America. And if you want to go back into history, who's the only group of people who have openly written about destroying America and the world? The Zionists, as usual. I have no doubts they're behind this. If not, it'd be the first time in history they weren't behind something. So, uh-oh, there we go again.
You were on slide 60-something.
So, okay, this I found very, very damning. This study came out in 2013. It was the effect of face masks on empathy and relational continuity, a randomized control trial in primary care. The study demonstrates that when doctors wearing a face mask during consultations, this has a significant negative impact on the patient's perceived empathy and diminish the positive effects of relational continuity. So when you wear a face mask, the perception is that if you're talking to someone with a face mask, you're going to perceive that they have less empathy towards you. That is ultimately what this study found. Now, that is just on a study between doctors and patients. But how do you think that would affect an entire community if everyone's wearing a mask?
Definitely, yeah.
Empathy is going to go right out the window. Feeling of community is going to go right out the window. The desire to want to help other people is going to go right out the window. And that, I have no doubts, they're not stupid. They're aware of this. They know this study exists. That is without doubt to me, one of the intended byproducts, and that is to reduce our, feelings of community by wearing masks.
And an interesting thing is that the people that are wearing the masks are going to accuse the non-mask wearers of lack of empathy because they want to kill grandma.
Yep.
So they have less empathy, but they're projecting that onto the non-mask wearers. And you're starting to see this. You're starting to see people with masks freak out at people not wearing masks. I just saw a video of some old lady in this grocery store told these kids, "I hope you die." You know, I mean, we're getting into a point where I think the face masks are cutting off a lot of people's supply of oxygen, and this is not working out well.
I'm glad you said that, and we will get to that. So the effects of wearing N95 and surgical face masks on heart rate, thermal stress, and subjective sensations. This came out in 2005. The results from the experiment demonstrate that heart rate, microclimate, temperature, humidity, and subjective ratings were significantly influenced by the wearing of different kinds of face masks. Nielsen et al., 1987, observed that delivery of air with different temperatures into face masks correspond to the application of local thermal stimulus to the skin surface around the mouth, nose, and cheek. This local thermal stimulus also affected the heat exchange from the respiratory tract. In our investigation, microclimate temperature, humidity, and skin temperature inside the face mask increased with the start of step exercise, which led to the different perceptions of humidity, heat, and high breathing resistance among the subjects wearing the face masks. So it seems like they had a bunch of people do a bunch of exercises while wearing this mask. High breathing resistance made it difficult for the subjects to breathe and take in sufficient oxygen. Shortage of oxygen stimulates the sympathetic nervous system and increases heart rate. It was probable that the subject felt unfit, fatigued, and overall discomfort due to this reason. White et al. 1991 found that the increases in heart rate, skin temperature, and subjective ratings may pose substantial additional stress to the wearer and might reduce work tolerance. This could be the reason why Farquharson, I guess, reported that working 12-hour shifts while wearing an N95 mask had indeed been a challenge to their ED staff. Yet the mainstream news media are telling us the exact opposite. No, wearing a mask doesn't have any negative health effects. These cocksuckers are lying right to our faces. It is amazing how absolutely blatant their lies are. Okay, so now let's get to the rational use of face masks in the COVID-19 pandemic. And this is from May 19th, 2020. And this is basically a poll of various articles and papers that were written by the leading health officials in a variety of countries. And so let's go through what each country had to say as of May 2020 on the use of face masks. According to the WHO, if you are healthy, you only need to wear a mask if you are taking care of a person with suspected SARS-CoV-2 infection. In China, they said people at moderate risk of infection, surgical or disposable mask for medical use. People at low risk of infection, disposable mask for medical use, and people at very low risk of infection do not have to wear a mask or can wear non-medical masks such as a cloth mask. Now, that last one, people at very low risk, that's 80% of the population, okay? And if you want to include the mild cases, then we're down to 96% of the population. That applies to 96%. Hong Kong, surgical mask can prevent transmission of respiratory viruses from people who are ill. It is essential for people who are symptomatic, even if they have mild symptoms, to wear a mask. So there, Hong Kong is saying wear a mask, but if you have symptoms. Wear a surgical mask when taking public transportation or staying in crowded places. It's important to wear a mask properly and practice good hand hygiene before wearing and after removing a mask. So basically what you have is, it's more than just wearing a mask. You have a whole bunch of other things you have to do too. You have to use the sanitization gel, but studies find that the sanitization gel actually kills the good bacteria in your stomach lining, and that has major detrimental effects to you. So I haven't used that shit in years. I don't think it's worth it to destroy your gut bacteria. Your gut has actual neurons, believe it or not, that connect to the brain in very unique ways. And to use hand sanitizer, to me, it's not an acceptable alternative to anything. Singapore, wear a mask if you have a respiratory symptom, such as cough or runny nose. Japan, the effectiveness of wearing a face mask to protect yourself from contracting viruses is thought to be limited. If you wear a face mask in a confined, badly ventilated spaces, it might help avoid catching droplets emitted from others. But if you are in an open-air environment, the use of a face mask is not very efficient. And then you have the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, does not recommend that people who are well wear a face mask, including respirators, to protect themselves from respiratory diseases. And the U.S. Surgeon General urged people on Twitter to stop buying these masks, okay?
I would say it seems unusual to me that Japan, who tend to be on the cautious side, are saying we're not using them. We don't, you know.
Well, I've talked to Ryan a lot recently, and he's over in Japan, and they didn't shut down any stores. They're not enforcing any kind of masks, and they did not really have any outbreak whatsoever. The UK, face masks play a very important role in places such as hospitals, but there's very little evidence of widespread benefit for members of the public. And in Germany, they said there is not enough evidence to prove that wearing a surgical mask significantly reduces a healthy person's risk of becoming infected while wearing it. According to the WHO, wearing a mask in situations where it is not recommended to do so can create a false sense of security because it might lead to neglecting fundamental hygiene measures such as proper hand hygiene. Right? So it's not just wearing a mask. There's a whole bunch of things you have to do along with wearing a mask. Okay, and here we go. CDC caves under political pressure. July 14th, CDC calls for Americans to wear a mask to prevent spread of COVID-19. All right, so somebody got bought off here. All right, so to sum it up, wearing a mask does little or nothing in regards to preventing the spread of COVID-19. It makes breathing more difficult, puts additional strain on the heart. It reduces oxygen levels in the blood, significantly reduces the perception of empathy in others, drastically affects the body's temperature and microenvironment. The quality and volume of speech between two people wearing masks is considerably compromised, and they might unconsciously come closer, increasing risk of infection. And thank you once again, Mr. NSA.
Where are we at? You're going to get through this. Fuck them.
Oh, I am. Okay, and wearing a mask forces the exhaled air to go into the eyes, causing irritation and discomfort, resulting in more frequent rubbing and increasing risk. It increases the chances of rashes, allergies, and other skin irritations, causes a variety of health problems due to breathing in too much exhaled carbon dioxide. It may give a false sense of security and make people adopt a reduction in compliance with other infection control measures. And it creates a humid habitat where SARS-CoV-2 can remain active due to the water vapor continuously provided by breathing and captured in the mask fabric, and can increase the viral load. Therefore, they can cause a defeat of the innate immunity and cause an increase in infections. Okay, so basically, if you're still wearing a mask, you're fucking stupid. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, that's it.
Who stands to gain? Well said. Mask manufacturers. According to the latest N95 respirators market research report from Technivo, the worldwide coronavirus outbreak is expected to significantly boost demand and production of respirator masks, particularly N95 masks around the world, during the global N95 respirators market size to grow by 382.9 million from 2020 to 2024, representing an impressive CAGR of over 9% during the forecast period. This survey also reiterates the fact that this is not a temporary crisis. Okay, so these guys are thinking long term. They're looking at market performance, and they're looking at how much money they're going to make over the next couple of years by everyone wearing a mask. Okay, year-to-date stock performance, this is as of March 11th, of biopharmaceutical companies working on COVID-19 treatments. And you have Vir Biotechnology, Inc. Their stock went up by March 11th, 279%, and that is before we even declared pandemic. Inovio Pharmaceuticals went up 278%. And again, that is before we actually announced a pandemic. And based on the numbers we saw earlier, there were not even 80 cases at that time as of March 5th. So you're looking at these people are anticipating, these people are anticipating the ultimately sales of various vaccines, even if covered by the government, because the government likes to buy everything and then give it out for free, it seems. So this is long-term planning. Everything I've said so far indicates long-term planning. This is not some knee-jerk reaction to a virus. This is a planned pandemic. This is just more products and services, health and hygiene products, household cleaning products, like everyone, all of these companies that are going to contribute to the change in behavior due to the coronavirus. They're all going to make money. And let me see, do I have any more here? FDA emergency youth authorizations for COVID-19 tests as of March 20th by companies, one-day share price move. So you have Genmark Diagnostics, their stock went up 41% in a day. Quidel went up 26% in a day. Roche Molecular Systems went up 13%, and on and on and on. These same cocksuckers are just extorting the public and the markets and everything. These people are evil. These people need to be ripped from their homes and tortured, drawn and quartered, and then have their bodies burned in the streets. Honestly, this is just unacceptable for the United States. This is the kind of thing that happened. This is the kind of thing that we say happens in other countries and doesn't happen here. Well, it's happening here. This article, how the COVID-19 bailout gave Wall Street a no-lose casino. No lessons have been learned. Why the $1 trillion coronavirus bailout, or $20 trillion actually, benefited the rich. COVID bailout cash goes to big players that have paid millions to settle allegations of wrongdoing. Okay, If you're alleged of wrongdoing, why is the government giving you money? And this is just a collection of articles. We all know who's getting rich off this. The same fucks who got rich in 2008 when the whole world fell apart. There's always somebody shorting the world. And that's what these guys are doing. Virus is one third of the real pandemic. I think I pretty much covered most of this. But basically, COVID isn't the only virus out there, right? So you have a whole slew of different viruses, and all the viruses total should make up about a third of the number of cases of pneumonia. That being taken into consideration, if we saw the number 52,000, then that should be actually a combination of all the different viruses, not just COVID-19. And so we're not hearing any other statistics. We're not hearing about any of these other viruses. Okay, so this goes back to the statistics I looked at earlier. It might be a little redundant to go over this again, but you know, pneumonia affects 5.6 million people per year. These are standardized numbers they've been looking at forever. And so really, I don't even know what to say. I'm sitting here just like irritated that I even have to go over this, because this is like, it should be common sense.
I know it is. It is irritating. Every time I have to think about anything involving what's going on in our world, it makes me so angry, because I can't go about my everyday life because of these psychopaths that want to control everything.
Yeah. Serious cases of COVID-19 represent 2-5% of infections, and serious cases of COVID result in pneumonia, often fatal. I've already gone over these numbers. Like I said, this is a work in progress, but the ultimate point is these numbers are completely fake. You know, the death count's inflated by 80,000 as per their own statistics. You know, they tell us one thing, but then they release statistics that when you actually look at and do the math, you're like, you're lying. You know, the most blatant of which is the greatly reduced influenza death count by about 90%. This is stuff I already went over earlier, but once again, the only statistic you really need to know is that the deaths involving COVID and pneumonia is only 52,000 as of the 15th. That number is, 2.5 times, 2.5 times that number is what's being reported. And to me, that's just, you know, the government has always outsourced its lying to the news media. Now they're not even bothering to outsource it. I've already gone over these numbers before, and I am frozen once again. So once the NSA gets out of my computer, we'll continue with the last couple of slides. But I think you guys overall get the point, that we are being lied to on a scale never before seen, with the exception of the Holocaust and JFK. And wait a minute, now that I think about it, everything. The thing is that they keep assuming that people are dumber and dumber, and they might actually be, because they're letting them get away with this. Let me find the right slides. Now it's not even scaling the screen. I think that'll, for the most part, wrap this up. I don't have too much more. Really just kind of covers the base pneumonia statistics and everything else. Let me comment on Donald Trump for a minute, okay? That guy never intended on being president. He was a protest candidate, and his candidacy got out of control. He is absolutely controlled by the Zionists. That's evident through his relationships with Jared Kushner and Kushner's father. He every once in a while says something that is an act of rebellion. You know, he will tote the official story. Then he realizes it's bullshit, and he'll make a couple comments that it's bullshit. And then within a day or two, he's back in line again, just showing that the president is not in control of anything. And so the news is starting to catch on to the inflation of the numbers. Nevada officials, federal data on virus nursing homes deaths is wrong. Fact check, CDC did not add flu and pneumonia cases to COVID-19. This article, the headline is misleading, but it actually is a good article. It basically shows how they're confusing the numbers. This is from Washington State, one of the first states that had reported gunshot victims listed in the COVID-19 deaths. There's a group in Washington State that kind of holds these guys accountable. And thanks to them, they've actually started to correct some of the numbers, but not really, because it still meets the criteria under the CDC's new guidelines. Colorado says nearly a quarter of the people Colorado said died from coronavirus don't have COVID-19 on their death certificate. How accurate is Illinois' count of deaths caused by coronavirus? See, this isn't anything unique to one particular state. This is happening all over the damn country. Massachusetts, same thing. Number of coronavirus cases and deaths at nursing homes remain unclear. Okay, if you're 80 fucking years old and they're saying you died of corona, that shouldn't even be included in the statistics. So you're fucking old. You probably should have died 10 years ago. Oh, and here they say that the CMS administrator says that she expected the figures would reflect honest errors in data entry. Whenever someone tells you it was an honest mistake, they're lying to your face, okay? Federal figures probably underestimate the number of deaths because the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services said facilities weren't required to report cases in which residents and workers before May 1st. Really? We had a pandemic, but before May 1st, they weren't required to report the numbers. These people don't even know. They wouldn't know the truth if it choked them to death. People age 60 and up are primarily the people getting killed. So inflating the truth. I'm just going over the numbers again. People who are allegedly dying as per the China numbers with who had no health conditions were 0.9% of the population. So that means that 99.1% of the population is not at risk as per the Chinese numbers. And here we go. If we were to actually multiply the 0.9% by the 3.7 million cases, you come up with a number that is significantly lower. It's 33,000 deaths potentially if there actually were 3.7 million cases, but it's reported at five times as much. It's just the evidence is just mounting that they are full of shit. Okay, is it safe for students and teachers to return to school? This was a great article that I found. And it goes over the statistics and looks at children and whether or not they have anything to fear by returning to the classroom. And according to the CDC's provisional COVID-19 death count by sex, age, and state, we all know the following data from February 1st to July 11th, 2020.1. Three times as many children in the age of 0 to 14 age demographic have died from influenza compared to COVID-19. In the 0 to 14 age demographic, there have been 11,158 reported fatalities from all causes. And COVID-19 fatalities in children 0 to age 14 demographic make up a very small 0.0278% of all fatalities. There's more data when looking at the 15 to 24 age demographic. 2% more teens and college age young adults in the 15 to 24 age demographic have died from pneumonia compared to COVID-19. Age 15 to 24, there have been 13,721 reported deaths from all causes. And when they say all causes, they mean all causes total. I have a feeling that if we were to check the numbers today, it would say that that number is in excess just for COVID alone. COVID-19 fatalities in the 15 to 24 age demographic make up only 1.14% of all statistics. We would not consider closing in-person educational institutions for typical seasonal flu or pneumonia fatalities. So why did we close them when COVID-19 numbers are even lower? There's more data when looking at the 15 to 24 age demographic. 2% more teens and college age young adults in the 15 to 24, I already went over that, died from pneumonia and COVID-19. More workforce age adults, 25 to 54 age demographic, have died from pneumonia compared to COVID-19. In the 25 to 54 age demographic, 146,000 reported fatalities from all causes. Thus, COVID-19 fatalities in the 25% of all fatalities. The risk of fatality for COVID-19 is on par with the risk of fatality associated with contracting pneumonia, 6.32% in this age demographic. Risk of fatality increases substantially for Americans over age 50 with at least one of the following comorbidities: hypertension, diabetes, all the shit that kills old people. Pre-retirement adults in the 55 to 64 age demographic had a slightly higher chance of dying from pneumonia compared to COVID-19. In the 55 to 64 age demographic, there were 178,884 reported total fatalities from all causes. Since February 1st, fatalities in the 55 to 64 age demographic had a 12% greater risk of dying from pneumonia than COVID-19. And COVID-19 fatalities in the 55 to 64 age demographic made up 8.21% of all fatalities. And the risk of fatality due to COVID-19 is on par with the risk of fatality associated with contracting pneumonia at 9.21%. The reported fatalities from the CDC's provisional COVID-19 death counts by sex, age, and state webpage include probable fatalities, unconfirmed by testing for COVID, but not for influenza or pneumonia. does not have accompanying data to detail how many of the fatalities had significant underlying pre-existing or comorbidity issues, does not have accompanying data to determine if any of the fatalities were treated in a hospital setting and if the subsequent fatality was a result of the treatment. What this data does reveal, however, is that there is no more significant risk of fatality from contracting SARS-CoV-2 virus than from contracting a regular influenza. Again, these numbers, I'm just getting fucking angry as I'm reading them because they are pissing on my leg and they're telling me that it's raining, just as my dad used to say frequently, and I'm fucking sick of it. This is bullshit.
Well said.
That is the end of my presentation. This is only a beginning. Consider this chapter one. Because I'll be continuing to gather data and compiling it. So you can probably expect another one of these in a month or two.
This is great, man.
Yeah,
this is
awesome.
There's a lot of stuff that I had never seen before. A lot of...
Here's the problem. The very first fucking time I heard the word pandemic, I knew this was bullshit. Got to be like, what, February, January? The split second I heard them freaking out, I was like, this is a psych warfare campaign. I didn't even need to have any data at all. And I could, and I was saying the exact same shit back then. See, the thing is, when you come to understand psych warfare and you come to understand what comprises a psych warfare campaign, as soon as you start to see the telltale signs, it becomes obvious it's bullshit. Yes. So really, people need to study psychological warfare more than they study anything else, because then you'll be able to detect what's bullshit and what's not way in advance of everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they use a lot of the same tactics, and there's language that they use. And I think people need to also remember that the mainstream media has a lot to gain by keeping this story going. It's good for their ratings. It's real good for their ratings. They also have a very lucrative relationship with the pharmaceutical industry. They account for about 60% of the advertising in the United States, one of only two countries that allows pharmaceutical ads to be run on TV, with New Zealand being the other one. So we're in we have a unique situation where the media is not objective. They don't have to be. The government has legalized their ability to lie through the media to us. So there's a lot of things working against you. I mean, the information that most people are getting from the mainstream media is so contaminated that they shouldn't trust any of it. They just should assume all of it is wrong. Now, the alternative media has done a really good job of picking up where the mainstream media always, you know, drops the ball. So the alternative media has had a lot of really good, a lot of reporters getting really deep into this. And of course, right on schedule, you start to see the social media companies try and silence that, because where anything that's counter to the narrative is considered such a threat that they just have to get them off of YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or wherever.
So I'll comment on that real quick, if I might. Social media companies need to be fucking regulated. The reason that they do whatever the government says is because they're not regulated. They can do what they want. They can pick and choose when they're a publisher, and they can pick and choose when they're a neutral platform. That is absolutely unacceptable. That needs to come to an end immediately.
Yeah, and they had all of them, testifying today. And, what are you going to do? These tech companies are for a lot of their spying services. I mean, they're going to regulate Amazon, and then Amazon, I mean, they need to be regulated. Don't get me wrong. I think they should, all that stuff, you know, they should be, there should be some, you know, but it's not going to happen because the CIA uses Amazon's cloud, and, you know, and they all have military ties. Now Google is used by the military. So is these hybrid companies that are coming up, like Palantir, that have deep government ties and ties to tech and to these venture capital companies like Sequoia Capital and Kleiner Perkins and outfits like this, that all have governmental/military ties, financial or otherwise. And so the tech companies are almost indistinguishable from the government in some ways, because they overlap, they do business with them in a variety of other deals. And then
the government is like, oh yeah, I know we're doing business together, but we also need to regulate you over here. It's like, get the fuck out of here. You're not going to regulate me. We're working together. So this is why we've got a really dangerous situation. And the most devious part is that a lot of people that are on social media don't even realize that this is happening. So they think that they're getting all of the news. They think they're hearing all of the voices that are out there. And what they don't realize is there's a huge chunk that is like just been removed. So they'll never hear it. And that's our voices, you know, talking about things in a logical way. We're the one, you know, showing that the CDC contradicts itself with their own numbers, their own statements conflict. Their numbers are they're lying, or you dig up their history of all the times they've been busted lying for all these other things. And it's like, we're talking about their credibility. I mean, like the sheep are just blindly following the government and the television. And what we're saying is, before we do that, who's Fauci? We don't know this guy. Let's figure out who this guy is before we just take his word for it. Who's Niels Ferguson in the UK? This is a guy that said that they were going to have, you know, a half a million deaths from this. His numbers were way off. So like, before we blindly follow these guys, we need to figure out who the fuck they are, because they're not like Fauci. Like, oh, let's, so the alternative media does our job. And we say, well, Fauci's connected to Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He's on their board. He's on the payroll. That's important information. Mainstream media, nothing, not a word. In fact, if you start talking about that stuff, then they'll throw you off of social media. So this is what we're up against. The truth is like is poison to them. They can't have it anywhere around. They want to silence us wherever we can. So if that isn't in and of itself a massive indicator that they are lying about this whole thing, I don't know what else is. I mean, Corey showed all the stats, but just put the stats aside. Just watch their behavior. How many times they get busted lying, like what they're doing, where their priorities are. Their priorities are silencing people that are talking about very specific things. Hydroxychloroquine is one of them. People that are anti-vaccine. But we got to get the why. Because those people have the ability to fuck up the whole production, the whole agenda, and they can't have that. So it's very clear to people that turn off their mainstream media and just take a look at it objectively. It's all there for you to see. Like, if you choose not to see it, that's on you.
Yeah, that's a perfect note to end on. I know Corey has to take off. Gentlemen, thank y'all so much.
I have one more thing before we go. I think might actually be a solution, and I'm going to share screen here for a minute, okay? And I believe that this is the solution. We are due for an extinction event, seriously. We deserve it, and this is who's getting my vote in 2020.
Well said, sir. You know, that is a solution. That's a means to an end right there.
I can't kill screen share. It's not letting me, so you can go ahead and take that off.
All right, we got it. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. Corey, that was an amazing presentation. Yeah, keep working on that. We're gonna get back on that some more for another show.
And one more thing. This week, either tomorrow or Friday, I have for Beyond Classified Episode 2, which is my JFK series, I will have John Barber on as a guest. John Barber actually worked with Garrison back in the 70s or 60s on the case. It's going to be a great show. He lives right here in Vegas, so I think we're going to do a show in person, but that will be in the next couple of days, so look for that.
And I definitely recorded an episode of Macroaggressions with Corey on JFK, and that'll be out in a couple of weeks. And we went deep, man. That was a big one. It was a good one.
Awesome. And by the way, you can catch Beyond Classified. It is free on our social media site. Just go to forbiddenknowledge.news, sign up, friend Corey, and you will see all the links to Beyond Classified. Again, gentlemen, thank you so much. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening.